Yeah. Greetings, yeah. Friends.
Salutations as well.
Idiom lovers.
Yeah.
Or just word stuff.
Word things. Word likers. If you're not ready to love again, that's okay.
Yeah, I know the feeling.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But hey. So these are music, huh?
Music.
Music today. We've done music before, have we not? I think I'm a little confused because one thing that always seems to come up is the jazz age in a lot of things. Remember, Big Apple and so many things.
Bread, favorite of mine.
But we weren't doing a music.
No.
Thing.
We just got
it. Just comes up
peripherally there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll dig it. So, if you don't, if you don't mind, I'll start us out.
Go for it.
Yeah.
What's your first musical number?
Well, mine here is jam.
Oh, okay.
As in like jam session.
Jam session,
we would say, right?
Right.
And, you know, to me, everybody knows it, but I'll say it just because maybe not everybody knows it. You know, when you're jamming or in a jam session, it typically means there are no rules or there's no chart to follow.
Mm-hmm.
That jam is free form.
Yeah.
And sort of open-ended and improvisational.
Yeah.
I just wanted to clarify that up front.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And ho-ho, right out of the gate there, to jam musically meant to play without any arrangement.
Yes.
Yeah.
We had a great weekly jam here in Pittsburgh, the Roger Humphreys jam session.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're both musicians and have been in many jam sessions.
Yeah.
But I never thought about why the heck do we call it that? Never dawned on me.
Same. I don't know.
Well, this is short and sweet.
All right. Is it like jam?
It's sailing.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
I gotta tell you.
I'm not getting excited till the end.
The musical jam has a relation to the nautical jam. 1899, steamship sailors without sails, men whose seagoing fathers once clamored for berths on clipper ships, derisively began to call any merchant sailing vessel a wind jammer.
Okay.
Referring to the high spread of sails needed to jam or capture enough wind to move.
Okay.
And that's a load of crap. but it is real.
Okay, that's a real sailing term.
And somebody did speculate that the term came from wind. I am dismissive of it.
Because you jam up the wind.
Right. So, but I included it for just to razz you.
No, I'm getting wise to these.
Well, it came up so fast. Like, if I had waited till the fourth thing, but I didn't want to do that to our listeners. I just want to get rid of it early.
Thank you.
But seriously, getting to it.
Yeah.
We never think of this, you know. You'd have where jam sessions began were indeed jazz age musicians who did some of the most improvising that had been done in music up till that time. They would play their main gigs that were called jazz, but were still pretty studied melody, solo, melody, you know, whatever.
Yeah, there was charts and stuff and forms.
Yeah, Bix, Biter, Beck, and what's the Whiteman guy's name? Paul Whiteman.
Oh,
what was his name?
I'm sorry. Which?
It was like right there with Bix Beiderbecke, like in the teens or something, the Whiteman in the 20s.
I'm not sure.
All right.
Sorry.
But anyway, these guys would, after their gig, go to another place and sort of, they crushed in there. Many of the musicians came in, packed the room.
Yeah?
Jammed themselves in there.
Come on.
Yeah.
No.
I'm not just going to pull your leg the whole time.
Are you sure?
Yeah. So, I mean, pulling your leg is fun sometimes.
Sure. I know. Feels like another pull.
Yeah.
I could, okay, go ahead. You go.
Yeah, I'm going to shove, force, ram, thrust, wedge, press, push, stick, squeeze, compress, confine, cram, pack, sandwich, insert, crowd, pile, throng, occupy, fill, overfill, overcrowd, obstruct, block, clog, congest, mob. So...
Nice. So,
well, these are terms.
Yes.
You understand.
I do.
That relate to
jamming.
You know, yeah. The use of jam to mean, here's where it really starts getting good. No, seriously. Because what it really is,
yeah,
is nebulous but amazing.
Okay.
And it's more nebulous because we're, you know, some 100 years removed from the root of it all. But
yeah.
The use of jam to mean a conserve of fruit prepared by boiling it with sugar to a pulp.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
Which first appeared in the 18th century.
Oh.
Is considered a separate word from jam in blockage sense. That is to jam things
jam.
Up, jam the gears, whatever.
Gotcha.
But it's very likely that the jelly-esque jam got its name from crushing or squeezing of the fruit to make it, reflecting the original press or squeeze sense of the verb jam.
Yeah.
So jelly, sweet jam, preserves came from jam, pressing.
Yeah.
All right?
Okay.
But that's still not the all of it.
Okay.
Here's the part that puts it all together in a weird way, and it's even coincidental, I believe,
mm-hmm. Wow.
That one word meant two things and is applied, but let me just give it to you.
Okay.
For one thing, this fellow who I did not know, Mesro, he sort of claims a different origin of it for its use, and he claims, I'm a little iffy on it because it's one of those things where I did that and I don't know. There was a bar, the Three Deuces, on 57th in Midtown Manhattan. I'm not sure that it's still there, but I'd be amazed if it is. He said that they do these after their main gigs, jam sessions down in the basement of the Three Deuces.
Okay.
And that his nickname was Jelly because he always wanted to play a Clarence Williams song called I Ain't Gonna Give Nobody None of This Jelly Roll. And so they would say, hey, Jelly, what you gonna do? And that it eventually morphed into calling him Jam, still meaning jelly, and that it happened right there in those nights at the Three Deuces. Now, that may very well be true, but I'm more inclined to think that, and here's the part where I say we're so far removed from it, but if you listen to old jazz, you hear, first of all, there's Jelly Roll Morton.
Yeah.
And you hear songs about Jelly Roll all the time, which was a euphemism.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it was a very sexual kind of thing.
Sure.
But that's a sweet notion. So that connotation of intimacy being sweet and using jam, jelly, Jelly Roll was something people used a lot. We didn't go to the store and get Oreos and Twinkies. Jam was still a thing. Jelly and jam was a tasty, sweet thing people used a lot, and
gotcha.
It was a part of life, life's sweetness.
Yeah.
And so these gigs, they were the sweetness of the night. They were the sweetness of life. They were what made it all worth it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. So that's where I arrived.
Wow. Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah. And the Mesro wants to claim it under that specific instance. It just seems a little late, you know, to have, you know, Cab Calloway and those guys in the 20s. Now, I know it was still, you know, Mesro was talking the 40s. And I just think that's seems a little late for that.
Yeah.
That's all the digging I could do.
Yeah, I feel like ragtime and Dixieland stuff was, there's some Jelly Roll songs in there.
Lots of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was pre-40s for sure.
Way.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, you're talking 20s.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's what I mean. So I think, yeah, I hear what you're saying with him saying, oh, yeah, that was me. Maybe not.
Yeah.
Huh.
So it's the sweet,
sweetness.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little sweetness.
I really like
that. That's nice. Oh, they are fun.
So what have you?
Wow.
Also sailing.
No. Well. Are you familiar with a show called The Simpsons, Jay?
I thought you would never ask.
Anyway, there's these characters on there. I'm sure you're familiar with them, at least.
Most of them. There's some that I don't know.
Yeah. So Bart is asking Marge if he can take a job working for Krusty the Clown, and Homer's there, and he goes off to a cutaway memory of him as a kid with a one-man band, where he says he's Archie Bell and the Drells. But when Homer comes back from his hilarious flashback, he says, "Yes, son, you can have an electric guitar like your old man." And Bart says, "Dad, I was asking about a job." And Homer says, "A gig, son. When you're a musician, a job is called a gig."
Yeah.
My word is gig.
Gig.
Yes. And like Homer said, when you're a musician, a job is called a gig.
Right. Well, now we have the gig economy. Uber drivers have
gigs. Come on. You're stealing my thunder.
Oh, sorry.
No, you're
erase
fine.
That.
No, seriously. You can leave it there. Yeah. I don't know. In this sense, a gig is kind of temporary. It is, which we're going to do as well, I think, a one-night stand type of show.
Huh.
Yeah. We're throwing that into our research. We're going to do that one because that's good too. Though like these days I know that it really does refer to a lot of jobs. Like we said, we're in the gig economy happening right around us all over the place.
Yes.
Where we're working temporary jobs to be further exploited and squeezed for profits for shareholders.
Right. But under the auspices of feeling more free.
Freedom, right.
Because we were told it's more freeing.
Exactly. But this one is pretty easy. It comes to us from the word giggle and how much fun you feel when you giggle. What
You're
a good time it
us.
Is to listen to music and just giggle.
Uh-huh. So what's it really?
The OED says gig is a tricky little word. The identity of the word in all senses is very doubtful. Which I enjoyed.
Well, the word exists. It's not doubtful.
No, but the identity of the word.
Oh.
Yes. So let's take a trip back to pre 1200.
Wow.
Where gig means whirling object or top, spinning. Perhaps you've heard the term whirligig before.
Ooh, maybe on the outset.
Sure. By 1225, there's evidence that the word gig means, I guess I saw giddy girl and flirtatious girl. And I don't know. I think the postulation is because of the spinning and twirling of the whirly gig, kind of dropping that part and calling the perhaps a spinning twirly girl the gig. 1791, we get a light two-wheeled carriage. And then later in this same kind of time frame, it becomes applied to a small boat used to ferry crew to a larger ship. It is also a small spear used to catch fish, which they think comes from the Spanish fizgig, I believe is the word, is the spear.
Mm.
And then we get to the 1840s, and I see the word gig mentioned in gambling, and it's basically just a numbers game, a lottery, really. So some folks call the spinning drum, which goes back to the pre-1200s spinning idea, that the numbers were picked from, the gig, like the actual, I'm going to say like a bingo wheel, but you know, like a
yeah,
lottery wheel.
Yeah, that's what I was picturing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that cage with the,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, to pick lottery numbers. But
yeah.
They called that thing the gig because, again, I think that the idea is because it spun. I saw more, I guess, supposition in the 20s, a man named Denver Ferguson, who had a local numbers game that he was doing with the help of his own printing press. He ended up making money and got enough bread to buy a nightclub.
Huh.
And that club he used to only book black artists since they couldn't get gigs anywhere else. Eventually he sent a few of his numbers runners out to recruit more black entrepreneurs in other towns, like nearby, to find venues to host concerts or dances or anything. And eventually he became the first booking agency for black entertainers in the South, which the circuit, I guess, eventually grew into the Chitlin' Circuit, which was a mainstay for touring swing bands, big bands, and later blues and rock shows. But the legend is that his three-digit lottery, the name of the number, they called a gig.
The name of the number?
They did say that the number was called the gig, but then I also saw that the device was called the gig. So I saw both. Some say the lottery number you picked was the gig, and some say the worldly thing was the gig.
Does that make sense? We've seen where it shifts.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, right, exactly. The first documented use of the term gig as we're talking about it is 1926. Melody Maker, 7th September 1926, with the byline, "One popular gig band makes use of a nicely printed booklet."
So they're saying a gig band, meaning a band that play, I mean, what does that mean in this context? They play one show at a time. But all bands play one show at a time, right?
Right. Yes. I don't know. I just got the headline, the byline of that story.
My job to ask questions.
It is. No, you're doing a great job. You do excellent work every time.
Not every time.
No. Honestly. Yes. 1926. So this is going to be after. Yeah. Yeah,
they, saying, it could if that be was one the first night. Print, mm-hmm. I was just like, wow, they come
how did they
to,
get it into it? I see what you're saying. Well, according to other jazz cats, UB Blake said that the band leader James Reese Europe used the term as early as 1905. So there's some swaths of time that are missing from my outline specifically.
Yeah.
But it could be from the 1905. So by 1926, it could be more popular. From the musicians in the local vernacular or any vernacular. Some jazz historians believe that the term could have originated from a French word, G-I-G-U-E, gig, which means dance, which also directly seems to give us the word jig, you know, dance.
Yeah.
So it's possible that the musicians playing at the dances could have used this term to talk about the job. But others believe that the term might have derived from the small horse-drawn carriages I mentioned earlier that were called gigs. I saw that in New Orleans, other places, in order to avoid being arrested for playing music in the street, black musicians would sometimes play music on the back of like carts and carriages that were mobile. But there is no specific site to that either.
Yeah.
I saw another phrase that I would like to do. In there as well that relates to tailgating that I thought was interesting. But like the OED says, the identity of the word in all senses is very doubtful. So we have a lot of speculation and a lot of things, but no direct relation of like, yes, the gig is the spinning thing and the spinning thing is dancing thing and the dances played, you know, musicians played the dances or yes, the cart was called the gig and they played on the back of the cart. So they said, oh, we got a good gig tonight, you know? There's no direct line anywhere.
Right. I was trying to tie something with it was a small cart, you said, and then a small bicycle or something.
A small ferry.
Small boat, and mm-hmm. then a spear. So why small? Was that like, it's a temporary thing? How can you correlate temporary to small or only semi-useful, not permanent, not large? I don't know.
No, I know that the jazz musicians did refer to gigs in the temporary sense, that it was that it wasn't even a nightly performance. If you were playing the same show every night, that wasn't a gig. If you're showing up one night or one show, that was a gig.
Yeah.
Or if you had a day gig, that was a gig as well. But I use that word all the time. Gig.
Sure.
And day gig. But
there's not to be confused with giggity.
Giggity, no. But that's that gig.
See, the French, because mm-hmm. it's just time doesn't allow it that way because, I mean, it was later that American jazz musicians went to France and, you know, received more an extended welcome, and the jazz scene was huge there for them, but that wouldn't work for them to bring that word back, because that was later on.
Well, I mean, New Orleans was home to French, the Creole. I mean, it was French inhabitants.
Oh yeah.
Pre that though. So I mean, it could have been that as well.
Yeah.
So I mean, the carriages are called gigs. There are still carriages called gigs. They look very small and don't seem like they would support a band, but these are modern ones, so I'm not. I couldn't find any old ones that made me feel like, oh yeah, you could put a band on the back of that gig. But yeah. Also, yeah. But yeah, it's possible, like, because then, like I said, New Orleans, that was certainly a French place. Don't say that.
All right, then.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get some gigs from these ads.
Yeah.
Allswell believes in the power of a good night's sleep for all. Their products feature innovative technology and unbelievable comfort and support without deflating your wallet. Combining the best of both worlds, the Allswell features hybrid mattress technology with memory foam and individually wrapped coils. For a winning blend of comfort and support, follow the link in the show notes for financing as low as 0%, a 100-night risk-free trial, free shipping and returns, and a 10-year limited warranty. Designed to make good sleep accessible to all. Real luxury, unreal prices. AllswellHome.com. Whole Nine Yards is sponsored by the Roberto Clemente Museum. Located in a restored engine house in Pittsburgh's revitalized Lawrenceville neighborhood, the Clemente Museum is a showcase of the largest exhibited collection of baseball artifacts, works of art, literature, photographs, and memorabilia related to Roberto Clemente and his life in baseball. Shop the store for clothing and other items featuring the iconic 21 logo, and purchase tour tickets for the museum at ClementeMuseum.com. Enter promo code W9Y21 for a 10% discount on hats and tees. That's ClementeMuseum.com, promo code W9Y21. Whole Nine Yards is sponsored by Big Science Music. Big Science Music is a Cannes and One Show award-winning original music and sound boutique, providing scoring, sound design, radio, podcast, and audio post-production services for the advertising, film, and video industries. Big Science Music also offers ADR, casting, and project management. Big Science Music's reels, full capabilities, and more can be found at BigScienceMusic.com. That's BigScienceMusic.com.
All right. Music.
Music and gigs and...
Yeah.
Music.
Stuff. I should have looked while Rebecca was talking to see, what the original... If we had done a music... I know we had to have done a music episode.
I will not take a stand on this.
Nope.
Because I don't remember.
It's all the good.
Yeah.
I have one.
All righty.
And it's going to be Toot Your Own Horn.
I did that last night.
Oh.
What?
What?
I play saxophone.
You do.
Better practice.
No, I know. I never leave the house. Toot or blow your own horn.
Yes.
To brag.
Oh, I don't do that.
About one's skills or achievements.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what you're saying.
No, I don't do that.
When you say that.
That's what one would say, yes. Correct.
Well, I mean, that's what you're implying.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he tooted his own horn.
Right.
Or something like that. Or in a positive way.
Yeah. Like if I said, gee, that speech I gave last week was pretty good. Fantastic, really. Yeah.
It's a man, Jay's tooting his own horn over there.
He really would say that.
Or something.
So, this expression...
I don't want to toot my own horn or anything.
Right, but yeah. then you go on and to toot it.
Oh yeah, you toot away. Sure.
Now, in some instances, you can almost see why. Let me hearken back to one famous politician's quote. In this business, if you don't blow your own horn, there's no music.
Huh.
Yeah.
All right.
Because no one's going to blow it for you is what he's saying, right?
No. Huh.
Yeah.
All right. All right.
Well, let's take a little look at this expression.
Sure.
Now, this might blow your mind, but 1549. 1549, man.
1549. We're getting it already.
Yeah.
Wow.
I love these. Miles Coverdale's The Second Tomb or Volume of the Paraphrase of Erasmus upon the New Testament.
All righty.
And this quote is in that book. Yeah, take our word for it. Let them never so much with their blazing words boast themselves. So now this is 1873. Anthony Trollope. Oh, that's a name, huh?
1873. All right.
In his work, Australia and New Zealand. Well, yeah, it was just all-encompassingly of the Down Under.
Do this all together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the colonies, when a gentleman sounds his own trumpet, he blows. And it is noted here, right, that it's interesting that the use of blow, you know, it's the same as how we use it today. In Western society, in the United States, that blows.
That blows, yeah.
It means it's no good.
Yeah.
And that was the use of it here. And it had a little flippy, ironic double entendre, so they right. They felt very good about themselves.
Yeah.
And rightfully so, sure. In 1873.
The man who toots his horn blows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll give you one better.
Okay.
There's one back even further from a United States reference in the notable year of 1776.
Oh, all right.
In the Warren Adams letters. It'd be John Adams. Who was Warren?
His cousin? Brother? Maybe a general? Nepotism?
All right. No.
What?
No.
No?
I'm not saying, I see what you said.
Oh, I don't know.
Warren is a last name. This is letters between a guy with the last name Warren and a guy with the last name Adams.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Not John Adams.
And Warren Adams. Yeah.
Right. Okay, cool.
Because, we had John Quincy for the nepotism.
Right. Sorry about that, everybody.
That was the second and then the sixth president, right?
Yeah.
I think modesty is highly overrated as a virtue. My motto is, toot your own horn, lest the same never be tooted. He's saying the same thing as that mm-hmm. politician much later that I quoted, saying, yeah. If you don't blow it, nobody else will.
Yeah. Who's gonna be your cheerleader?
Yeah.
If you're not.
Who's going to drive you home tonight? You know what I mean?
Well, that's in there now.
What?
Thanks. What song?
That's a good song.
Yeah.
I've been meaning to look up who wrote it, because I think I heard it a couple of weeks ago, and I remember, oh, man, that's a good song.
They're just playing in the back.
Yeah, but did they write that, too? I don't know. But I'm not to take anything away from their songsmithing.
Yeah.
All right. It's the Beth of Kiss. So this one doesn't have a lot to it, and look,
okay.
It's like one I had recently, too. It's an obvious conception
mm-hmm.
that you would want to, like, not pat yourself on the back,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, back in the 18th century, people connected that metaphorical
mm-hmm.
use of it to say, don't celebrate yourself.
Yeah.
It's a prideful don't thing.
Yeah.
If no one else is celebrating you, then die quiet in obscurity.
No one cares about you, buddy.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's
There you go.
Yeah.
That's a simple one.
Yeah. Toot your own horn.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, I literally do that, and I figuratively don't.
Mm.
Well, if you need anything, I'll just be back here in the green room. Flawless.
Yeah.
Flawless.
Pretty much.
Green room.
Yeah, it's that waiting room for entertainers or something.
Yeah, essentially that's what we're saying, right? It's not specifically music. It's any more less music, more theater, I guess, really. But yes, we're using it to mean like a kind of a pre-show room where you would hang out backstage.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And there's lots of theories about this one. I'll just say it. One theory is a real theory I saw that, you know, you're backstage and you're about to perform your one-man show. Jay, we hardly knew ye. You're pumped, but you're feeling a little nervous, maybe a little stressed, kind of nauseated. Huh. Maybe you're looking a little green.
Ah.
It was out there, so I'm throwing it out there.
Yeah.
There is another theory that it comes from one of our, like, I don't know, one of my favorite discoveries, Cockney rhyming slang, which comes from the word green gage, which is a variety of plum, but that rhymes with stage. So they would have said green gage instead of stage, and then green gage becomes green room. Is that theory's idea?
Wow.
I just like it because it's Cockney rhyming slang.
Yeah, it's trickier to follow since those words aren't in our regular...
It's a variety of plum.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I will always follow the Cockney rhyming slang.
Sure, it's fun. Good things.
A lot of folks use the term green to mean new, right?
Yes.
Like a rookie or...
Well, it comes from like ripe fruit, unripe fruit, right?
Yeah. Unripe fruit, also oxen and young bulls and oxen, they have undeveloped horns, which I guess are little green kind of nubs. So like greenhorn is where that's a rookie as well. I didn't say the greenhorn part first.
No.
Greenhorn. Yeah. But I also found in my research, and a lot of this comes from mentalfloss.com, a friend of the pod, Samuel Pepys, in an October 7th, 1666 entry in his diary, Mr. Pepys goes on to describe he's going to go with some of his friends, princes, dukes, sirs, to ask the king for more money for the navy. And he writes, "We were called into the green room to address the royals." And the color of the royal room was also talked about in the next year with the Earl of Lauderdale. Have you come across him in the book at all?
No.
All right. "Oh, it would hold your heart good to see what a new world we have air and how bravely all the king's business goes on. Now we have no green room. All is fairly treated in council." And I think he's talking about there is no behind-the-scenes room, which we call the green room because we know this house, which was Whitehall Manor, I think is what the house is referring to.
Yeah.
Have you come across that?
Yes.
Okay, so yeah. This green room in this place. So the Earl of Lauderdale is saying, we conduct our business in open council versus in behind green room doors. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so... Okay, was this room green? And it seems like I saw a quote from 1662 that was talking about a council meeting. This is unrelated to Samuel Pepys, just in general. That we can't afford the expensive cloth to cover the interior walls of this courthouse, so get the cheaper green cloth. The quote is, "For the upper tiring room in the cockpit, the walls being unfit for rich clothes, 110 yards of green baize at 3 shillings 4 pence the yards." So they're using this green fabric to protect their rich clothes from the dirty walls, is what I'm getting there. And in this green baize fabric, like I said, was inexpensive, but would also have been used in theater curtains and in people's home, stuff like that. So there is a term called behind the green that is theater slang, meaning being backstage behind the green curtain, essentially.
Hmm.
The term first appears in writing, like talking about the stage back room in a play, A True Widow by English playwright Thomas Shadwell. That's from 1678. I saw another quote in 1697, another play anonymously written, The Female Wits. And a character called Praisall gushes to the assembled actresses, "I'll treat you all in the green room with chocolate." Huh. There is a theory that green room may have stemmed from the term scene room, which is a term used in theaters to describe a backstage waiting area or dressing room. Other historians and dictionaries suggest that it came from like a specific theater, the cockpit at court, London, which is where the dressing rooms.
Pepe's is always at the cockpit.
Yeah, so that's what, yeah, where the dressing rooms were, same thing, were covered in this green baize fabric. So that's a literal green. There are literal green rooms in these places.
Yeah.
But everyone's saying the origin is uncertain.
None filled with plants or anything.
No.
I really thought we were going to get to some plants.
Not, and that's just, it's green baize fabric, which is a coarse, typically green woolen material resembling felt, used for covering billiard and card tables. I did not mention that earlier. Sorry about that.
Yeah, yes. You know, we had that general idea.
Green baize. Yeah, is a felty fabric. They didn't want to expend, they got to keep their clothes nice, but they don't want to spend too much to cover up the walls. You got to get the cheap fabric. Turns out it's green.
Just make the walls not dirty.
Yes.
I don't know how they didn't have like a, you know, gallon of paint back. I don't know. Yeah, they had something. Just whitewash them.
Sure. Scrub them down with something.
Something.
Bucket, fat, soap, right?
Whatever you got.
I don't know. I'm not reading Pepe's book. He's not talking about cleaning anything.
No, he doesn't clean.
Yeah.
But if he has a workman over, he can't go to work. He has to stay with them or else they will not do anything to his liking. So he pretty much may as well do it himself because he has to stay there anyway. Yeah, they please him not.
I read him going on with the Navy and him just, yeah, he's like, and no one was saying like, hey, we need more money for the Navy, guys, like, we got to do this. And everyone was very proud of him for standing up to, it sounded like a prince that was not feeling what he was putting down. But yeah. It was necessary to say what he said.
Well, he knows he's going to get his cut, so he's going to fight for that. But yeah, all right, green room.
He was in the green room addressing the royals.
Mm, mm, mm.
Yes.
A thing like that. I really thought it was going to be plants.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay.
Huh.
I did not. I was thinking it was a chroma key room, a giant room with so you could chroma key stuff in there.
This was way before the chroma key. All right, so you could find us at what, Ray?
Whole Nine Yards Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Reddit.
And then on Facebook, we're probably on
Whole Nine Yards Podcast.
That's how we do that.
The full word. Yeah.
Yeah, podcast on there. Mail us. Message us, DM, PM, whatever they call it.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah. and we're here to receive.
Yes.
I'm Jay.
And I'm Ray.
We're not idioms. Sorry, I laughed there.
It's all right. Yeah. It's good. They're all good.
Whole Nine Yards is written, recorded, and produced by Big Science Pods. Learn more at wholenineyards.org or contact Whole Nine Yards by emailing heyyou@wholenineyards.org. That's heyyou@wholenumber9yards.org. Whole Nine Yards theme music composed by Big Science Music.